Hi, everybody. Alyssa here. On my panel at CrookedCon, Winning Everywhere, I talked to Representative Sarah McBride, Ben Wickler of the Wisconsin Dems, Representative Janelle Bynum, and Anderson Clayton, head of the North Carolina Dems, about how we turn red states blue. Enjoy this bonus pod live from CrookedCon. Can you hear me? Okay, great. Oh my goodness, welcome. First panel. I was a little nervous. Thank you for filling the auditorium. Well, welcome to CrookedCon, everyone. I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco, and in this panel, I've gathered some of our top swing state party leaders and elected officials that were able to make red states blue to discuss how in the world they were able to make what many thought was the impossible possible, and how we can fight our way back into power regardless of a map stacked against us. Joining me here is Congresswoman Janelle Bynum of Oregon. Representative Sarah McBride of Delaware. Ben Wickler, former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. And Anderson Clayton, chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party. So first, to set the stage, everyone, according to the New York Times, more than 89% of counties in the U.S. shifted towards Trump in 2024, including states like New York, New Jersey, Illinois, and California. However, just days ago, moderate Abigail Spanberger flipped the governorship in Virginia by a wide margin, becoming its first woman governor. Moderate Mikey Sherrill kept the New Jersey governorship blue, and socialist Zohran Mamdani won a decisive victory to be mayor of New York City. So let's start with the buzziest race of the week, New York City mayoral. For a party that's criticized for being coastal, a lot of talk about the future of the party has centered around this race. But what's undeniable is that Zohran ran a great race in New York City. So I'm going to start with Ben. Ben, what, if any, lessons can Democrats across the country take from his win? Does his win mean anything to races in Wisconsin, for example?
Absolutely. And what it means is have great candidates, have extraordinary campaigns, energize people, give people the realistic knowledge that they're powerful, have a message that goes directly to what voters really care about and deliver it everywhere, all the time, relentlessly, invite people in, build bridges, expand the tent, and stand on principle and fight for what you believe in. All those things are possible. They'll look different in every different place.
Right.
But it was a model of going from zero to hero, or I guess 1% to 50.4% in a year by going directly to where voters were and speaking to the things that they were talking about when they're not talking about politics.
Right.
And when you give the thing that I love about that campaign is that every volunteer, the 90,000 people that knocked on doors, they all knew the campaign's message and they could evangelize it. There was something that they were excited about telling other people about.
Right.
And that's when it feels like a campaign is forcing you to use language you don't use to just talk about things that you don't care about. It's very hard to actually get excited and make the case for it. Democrats often have this debate about preaching to the choir versus trying to get people on the street. But people on the street usually can only hear if the choir is singing really loud.
Yeah.
So there's not, it's actually kind of a false choice. And it's not like the fast and free buses and childcare are outside of like the broad political mainstream. Like these are things like Bloomberg started a free bus program. He was a Republican.
Yep.
But it spoke directly to things that people actually really cared about. And I think to put a cap on this, there's two giant forces at work to me in this moment. There's a huge number of people in New York and in Wisconsin and probably all of our states and across the country who have been changing the channel because they haven't been getting the change that they want.
Yep.
And they're furious about affordability in particular. It's just hard to be able to make ends meet. And Trump came in with a huge promise about this and has completely flubbed it. And those folks are already looking for change. It's already clear that the whole thing was a con. And then there's a second overlapping, but not exactly the same, gigantic volcanic rage constituency that feels like the entire country, our democracy, the rule of law, our basic human rights are being torn apart and shredded. People who are paying attention to the news, paying attention to politics, who, you know, were working their asses off in 2024 to stop this guy from coming in, and now Project 2025 is happening. And I think that it's a false choice to say you can only work on one of those two things.
Right.
But what's great is when you give people that are will do anything they possibly can to save the American Republic, if you say, here's a way to talk about affordability with people who've already given up on politics, yeah. but you can connect with them at the level of their lived experience, that allows everyone to be working together for a vision that's big enough for all of us.
Amen. Anderson. Anderson, do results outside of North Carolina really mean anything to you when you're looking at candidate recruitment inside North Carolina?
I think that Chair Wickler made the best point that I have heard is that the fact that we need to run candidates from the communities and the districts that they speak for and also let them be authentic to their communities and what they need to represent them. And I think what I was watching on election night was the fact that Pennsylvania, I don't know if anybody in here is from there, but shout out, baby. Y'all kept some Supreme Court races in people's minds. And for North Carolina next year, we're looking at the fact that we've got to maintain a Supreme Court justice seat and the fact that Democrats can maintain those seats, and also looking at states like Georgia and Mississippi, because, you know, our Speaker Mike Johnson likes to say the fact that this only happened in blue states. And I ain't gonna lie to y'all, Mississippi, last time I checked, ain't got a Democratic governor. You know, I think that Georgia also is gerrymandered all to hell. And I also think that North Carolina, where we had historic municipal election wins, and shout out to people like Beth Kennett and Ben Clapsaddle and Mickey Smith and the people to me on the ground in North Carolina that won in races where you've got 6 years Republican incumbents that got ousted in North Carolina on Tuesday night. It did not just happen in red states or blue states. It happened in red states and places all over because people are fed up and pissed off with what's happening right now across the country, right?
Right. So, speaking about being pissed off, let's talk about being a Democrat right now. So, Wall Street Journal poll from late July found 63% of voters view the Democratic Party unfavorably. So, Representative McBride, in a recent interview, you said, quote, "I think voters feel like Democrats have sort of been assholes to them." So go on.
Well, first of all, I am so excited to be on this stage with this incredible panel.
Thank you.
And in this space here, between being here at Crooked Con today and Tuesday's elections, we are all living out, and it is a... finally a good week to be a Democrat in this country after 10 long months of Donald Trump. That comment about being assholes sort of harkens back to a point that I've been trying to reinforce for people, which is that one of the things I have seen as a candidate, first for state Senate and then for Congress running statewide in Delaware and suburban, urban, and rural parts of my state, is that voters fundamentally ask two questions about a candidate and about a party. The first question is, does this candidate, does this party like me? Not just do they care for me, do they respect me? Those extend from that, but do they like me? The second question is, what does this party think? What does this candidate think? And if you can't answer that first question to a voter's satisfaction, they never get to that second question. What does this party think? And I do think that one of the challenges our party has had is that many voters, frankly, across the diversity of our country, have felt like our party as a coalition have looked down upon them, don't like them. They've been assholes to voters across this country. And let's be clear that you can't build the diverse working class coalition necessary to win, and the diverse working class coalition that we are fighting for when we do win, if people don't feel like you like them and by extension care for them and respect them. That, yes, means not employing the politics of shaming and blaming voters who are still on a journey on issues, aren't quite where we want them to be. It also means not being assholes to our own base.
Right.
It means not employing identity politics and purity politics from the center toward the left, not communicating to Mayor-elect Mamdani's base and supporters who are so excited about him that our party deems his position on Israel and Palestine to be prejudiced and unacceptable, right? And so I do think that we have to internalize that to build a big tent, we have to be the most welcoming coalition to everyone from our left to the center. Because at the end of the day, a big tent, so we were talking about backstage, it goes both ways. A big tent is bisexual. It goes to the left and the right. And that starts with us being kind to one another, being respectful to one another, and being welcoming to one another.
Amen. Representative Bynum, you are only 50 years old. You are on your third career. What? I say that. I'm going to be 50 this year.
It's in Wikipedia, I suppose. She is only 50. But I feel a little naked right now. Okay.
Let's talk about it. You're on your third career. You are an electrical engineer. You have an MBA. You run four McDonald's. You were a state representative and recently became the first Black member of Congress from Oregon. And that race was one of the most expensive ever in Oregon. And I'm curious, what issues were the most important to voters in your race? And how did you convince them that as a Democrat, you weren't an asshole?
Well, I've always had a purple district. So let me be clear about that. And my district is 0.9% Black. So this wasn't about, you know, calling all the Black people in the district and getting them to vote for me. This was about... Because that wasn't going to exist, right? This was about, and to Representative McBride's points, for our district, this was about, does she have values and will she stand up for me? And I've been married to my husband 27 years or so. I love him, but I don't agree with him on everything, right? And so voters are the same way. They can love you and respect you if they know that you'll stand on values and that you'll stand up for them. And that, I think, was a pivotal moment. So the person that I ran against, y'all probably drive past her building every day now, and she's got the big poster of Trump and the big, I think, is Eisenhower. She's the labor secretary now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the third time that I would beat her. So they put up the...
Let's take a moment.
So also a point to note is that my campaigns, ever since 2016, Trump and I have been going together a long time, on the same ballot. Ever since then, I ran my campaigns with the ultimate amount of discipline. I raised money. I used Google Calendar. Where I said I was going to be was where I was. I always did my call time. And I believed in a very strong ground game. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is going to make the difference in these races coming up now. We have to be disciplined, period. Meaning, if you sign up to volunteer for a campaign, show up. And I had volunteers that didn't show up. And I tell my staff, give me their numbers.
Yes.
Because I'm going to call them. And I'm going to say, hey, Jeannie. Because it was usually Jeannie, right? Like, you know how you go down the list and you can tell how old people are?
Well, at least it wasn't
Jean wants to write postcards and that's it.
But to kind of wrap this up, I would call and I would say, hey, we missed you. And that let people know that I was dead serious about winning and that I don't need you to flake out on me. And that's what I hope that you all in your former party chair commission get people to understand. Like, you need to show up. You need to take it seriously, and we're not going to win just on the candidate's energy.
And isn't it sort of interesting, like, I get... Yes. I have had so many people ask me, like, how can I participate? How can I participate? And the one thing... So I live both in New York City and in upstate New York, and people are busy, right? And so for me, I'm like, if you can commit to one small thing, like... Sometimes participating feels too overwhelming. And it's like, if you can write 5 postcards, send 5 texts, like anything is something, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much that people can do. I had my kids sorting walklet. I made them do something. Of course, they dropped all the walklet that I had. And, you know, my son was like, I'm doing 8 houses today. I'm like, sir, we have like 40 to do. He's like, it's 88 degrees. Anyway, but... And he left the minivan door open. I'm a mom of 4, too, so that is my whole lens. It's like, how can I punk my kids into doing stuff? But But the point of it all is that everybody can do something. And you can make phone calls, you can write postcards, you can stand on the corner. And for me, it's like, what's your why?
Mm-hmm.
So the story I tell about that is that this baby son, Asa, that I'm probably going to talk about a lot here, he's 15 now. He was about 13 at the time. He wanted to make the soccer team. And this was in the summertime. And we had already learned with the older daughter, if you don't go to the summer soccer clinics, you don't make the team in the fall if you're going to a new high school. Learn that the hard way. Only kid that didn't make volleyball. Okay. So I was like, Asa, time to get up, time to go to the clinic. He was like, they told me it was optional. And I said, son, if they tell you it's optional, it's not.
Right.
That is the thing. Mm-hmm. It is not optional. If you want an America that reflects your values, it is not optional to participate.
Yep.
This episode is brought to you by Pregnancy Justice. We seek justice above all else. You know what's not a crime? Having a miscarriage. But in states across America, anti-abortion leaders are trying to make being pregnant, having a miscarriage, or seeking an abortion a crime. Across the country, they're giving legal rights to fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses, which means pregnant people have fewer rights. It gives the police and prosecutors permission to target and jail women for all kinds of behaviors they don't like during pregnancy. What this leads to is more women facing jail time for having miscarriages and abortions. It restricts access to fertility treatments like IVF and means that pregnant people will be more afraid and unable to get the medical care they need. These efforts to make pregnancy a crime are not about safety or care, but about control. They are about forcing women back to a time when we could not make basic decisions about our bodies, whether it was to get birth control, get an abortion, or decide when and how we start a family.
In the years since the fall of Roe, we've seen these cases continue to go up. A recent report from Pregnancy Justice, a national organization that defends the rights of pregnant women, tracked over 412 cases across the country charging women with crimes related to their pregnancy, pregnancy loss, or birth in just 2 years since Roe fell. Our justice system should be focused on solving real crimes, not attacking pregnant people for their personal health care decisions. Pregnancy Justice is fighting for a future where pregnant women are in charge of their own bodies and lives, free from government control and the fear of jail time. We deserve care and compassion, not punishment. Learn more at pregnancyjusticeus.org/not a crime. That's pregnancyjusticeus.org/not a crime.
If you love Positive America and want more of my political analysis, you should subscribe to my newsletter, The Message Box. I'm Dan Pfeiffer, former senior advisor to Barack Obama, and in Message Box, I break down what's actually happening in politics and what it's going to take to beat Donald Trump and MAGA. If you follow every poll and every twist and turn in the campaign, Message Box is for you. This isn't just hot takes. Every edition delivers clear analysis, behind-the-scenes insight, and practical strategy you can actually use, whether you're working on a race, organizing your community, or just trying to win the argument in your group chat. So if you're listening to this, hit pause, go to your browser, and head to crooked.com/yeswedan, because I have a special offer for Crooked Media fans. You'll get 20% off a Message Box for an entire year. So go to crooked.com/yeswedan.
Ben, Democrats, you know, aren't that happy with the Democratic Party, but are they more pissed at what's happening in the country than they think that Dems are lame? Do you know what I mean? Even though they're mad at us, are they still at least motivated by everything Trump is doing? I mean, we're in the longest government shutdown. And let me tell you, when I was in the White House, I oversaw the government shutdown. And this is unlike anything I've ever seen. Longest government shutdown. Flights are going to start being canceled going into Thanksgiving. Is there upside? How do we leverage what is happening? How do we drive that message? Because I feel like people aren't mad. Like, they're not mad enough at Trump right now.
I will tell you, they are so mad at Trump
right
now.
See, that was a layup.
There is so much fury.
That was the set and spike.
She made the volleyball team.
Thank you so much.
I feel very honored to be on this panel with these two hero congresswomen, this incredible chair in North Carolina, with you, Alyssa, with these amazing people. And I will say, I'm going to guess that when you are home talking to people, they're not like, why do you suck so much? They're like, why can't we beat these people?
Right.
Let's fight back. Where's the fight? Let's fight. That is not people giving up on politics and tuning out and disengaging because, like no one can do anything. They want people to be heroes and champions and fighters in this moment.
Right.
And what we've seen in every election this year, which I'll say started in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race
yes,
in the spring, where we beat Elon Musk despite his $55 million. That was like the moment of maximal despair in, Democrat world and people who had tried to stop Trump from being able to win. And in that election, Musk demanded that the Republican candidate run ads about how Trump had endorsed him.
Right.
That was his strategy because he was like, all those people voted for Trump. We got to turn those people out. And it worked. There were more voters for Elon Musk's candidate than any previous Supreme Court candidate in the history of Wisconsin.
Right.
But there was even more people who were so furious about the entire thing, furious about the idea Wisconsin could be bought, furious that the idea that a system of justice could be so totally corrupted that it would give people like Musk and Trump a free pass, that Susan Crawford not only won the race, she won with more votes than not just any Supreme Court candidate has, more votes than any Republican candidate for governor in a November election has ever had in the state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
That's what happened this spring. And that is happening all across the country. There have been before Tuesday, there were 47 elections so far this year. Democrats have overperformed and or won in 46 of them by an average of 15 percentage points.
Wow.
And it is, and we just saw that again from Georgia to California to Mississippi to everywhere, from Pennsylvania. Like, there are some people who are mad at Democrats because they're Republicans. And then there's a lot of people who are mad at Democrats because they want to feel like they can actually do something about this moment, and they just want to see more.
Right.
And Democrats, anyone running for office, independents, people maybe who feel like this Republican Party's not for them, who get into the fight and fight for values that unite us all and the needs that we all have in a country people can actually afford and a country where they can be heard, they will find an eruption of volunteer energy and of passion and of belief that you could only dream of, that is right. Not at all captured in those polls. This is a moment about swinging for the fences.
Mm-hmm. So another question for you, Ben, because I am such huge fans of everyone on stage that I follow them and I've read everything that they've ever written and I've listened to everything they've ever said. And you talk about that politics is actually like 5D chess. How is that?
So it's 5D chess, not in the sense of every person at every time is thinking through the, ninth order consequences of their stuff.
Right.
It's that there's multiple game boards at once, and whoever wins on each of those game boards sets the rules for all the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So the rules that determined the Republican House majority right now were set by the Republican state legislature in North Carolina, which got there because Republicans won a Supreme Court race, a couple of Supreme Court races, several years ago. And if Republicans hadn't won the Supreme Court race, they wouldn't have been able to gerrymander the state and give the Republicans the then supermajorities that allowed them to gerrymander the state and give three House seats to the GOP, which is the size of the entire Republican National House majority. So, which, I feel a way about that. I can only imagine how Anderson feels about that. And we had the exact same thing in Wisconsin with our state Supreme Court. It was only by defeating this totally rogue MAGA majority in our state Supreme Court that we actually had a court that read our state's constitution and said that our ultra gerrymandered maps were unconstitutional. Now Democrats have a shot at winning a trifecta in Wisconsin in 2026.
Right.
And if they do that, they can restore voting rights to people before 2028. And so all these fights, like if you think the United States Supreme Court is completely out of line, which means that you are correct and are paying attention.
Right.
The only way to solve that problem is to have a pro-democracy, pro-justice majority in the United States Senate.
Right.
That reforms the filibuster or gets rid of it so that it can actually pass Supreme Court reform like the vast majority of Americans want to do. All these things are interconnected, which is why you have to work not just every 4 years,
right,
but all the time if you want to win.
Can I jump in real quick?
Get in there.
I think this is also a testament to building the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a strong bench, you can't get up to the Supreme Court level. So that's why there's an attack on education. They don't want, you know, well-educated lawyers, but we're getting a lot of practice in court now, right? So we're building our bench.
So much practice.
Right? But also, like, I don't think I would have been able to run at the pace in which I was able to run if I had not gone through four swing races.
Right.
The most expensive in the state. And that gets you battle ready. So people have to jump in. That's why, you know, programs like Emerge and Emily's List, that's why those are so important. Mm-hmm. Because you have to build the bench. You've got to have people who are tough enough to take somebody lying like crazy about you on TV and all of your friends calling you to my girl, they lying about you on TV, but your hair look good. Like, that's true story. Girl, they lying about you, but your hair looks so good.
Oh, my God. Okay. Anderson, we touched on this a little bit, but what is the latest on the newly passed rigged maps in North Carolina?
Yeah. I just want to give, because I have this audience in front of me, Ben Wickler, when we're talking about five-dimensional chess, when I got in this job in 2023, I was the youngest state party chair in the country. Still playing the title. But the number one thing was that people did not trust young people in these jobs, surprisingly, right? And Ben Wickler was the first person who genuinely believed in North Carolina in 2023 and actually helped divert donor money to North Carolina, introduced me to people, and made the case. And so to me, when he talks about five-dimensional chess, he's not just talking about it from the perspective of the Wisconsin Democratic Party chair. He talked about it in 2023 from understanding the entire map and the landscape of what was happening and where populations were shifting and where the party needed to be focused on. And so from the bottom of my heart, thank you, Ben Wickler, for being to give me that chance, because it's not just North Carolina. And to the story that he just told you all, Hakeem Jeffries would be Speaker of the House right now if we had not lost a Supreme Court justice fight in North Carolina in 2020, right, with Chief Justice Sherry Beasley by 401 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what we have to go back to, because we have to look at the down ballot races. And for a long time, I think the detriment of the Democratic Party has been looking up and not down, right? Mm-hmm. And figuring out the five-dimensional chess of where we need to be. And so in 2023, when I got in this job, North Carolina looked at the fact that we had a 5-2 minority on the state Supreme Court. And what was going to be the way that we brought ourselves out of the gerrymandering that we experienced? Because in 2022 in North Carolina, we still had a Democratic Supreme Court. We lost Chief Justice Sherry Beasley in 2020, but we still had two more Democrats that had a majority on that court until 2022. And in March of 2022, the Democrats on that court came in and said, partisan and racial gerrymandering is actually illegal for the congressional races in North Carolina. And they sent 7 Democrats and 7 Republicans, because we have 14 members of Congress in North Carolina, right, to Congress on our behalf in 2022, and even representation of the state. And at the end of 2022, we again lost our state Supreme Court in North Carolina. We lost those 2 Democrats, Justice Ervin and Justice Inman. And when that happened, Republicans came in 2023 and they re-gerrymandered. They ignored a 200-year court precedent in North Carolina. And I don't know if I don't have any lawyers in this room right now, but they did not even have a case that was brought before them, right? So you know that they were doing it just to play partisan baseball with the state of North Carolina. And they came in March of 2023 and re-gerrymandered our state to a 10-4 minority. And so when we came in, a new officer board in 2023, we said we have to focus on levers of power in the state that are going to be prioritizing, right, the levers of power everywhere else. North Carolina has so much power to give back to the nation if we focus. The South has so much power to give back to the nation if we focus on it and put our money and our energy where our mouth is. And so we held a Supreme Court justice seat. We went from in 2020 losing one by 401 votes to 2024 keeping Justice Allison Riggs on the bench with 734 votes. 734 votes out of 5.5 million cast, and she had never run statewide, and it was on the same ballot that Donald Trump was that carried our state by 3 points last year. That is the power of having people on the ground and good candidates and everyone like that. And in 2026, we've got to hold Justice Anita Earls' seat, because she is also going to be up. It's a Democratic hold again for us. And in 2028, North Carolina has the ability to take back 5 more House of Representatives seats to the Democratic Party nationally if we take 3 Republican Supreme Court seats that will be up in 2028 in North Carolina. And it is a plan, right, that took Wisconsin and through the leadership of Ben Wickler and the fantastic folks and the organizers on the ground there, right, North Carolina can follow that same trajectory of gaining back. Because what Republicans just did this year in North Carolina is they said, 10-4 is just not enough for us. My Senate Majority Leader, Phil Berger, decided that he was a little nervous because for the first time in his 26 years of running for office, he has a challenger in his primary. And he made a phone call to Donald Trump and said, hey, Donald, baby, I'd give you an extra congressional seat out of North Carolina if you'll give me an endorsement in my primary. And Donald Trump said, who the hell is this that's calling me right now? I don't even know a North Carolina state representative. Who cares about him? But yeah, I'd like another congressional seat. Y'all go ahead and make that one happen. Never gave an endorsement, mind y'all. But also, definitely, they gave a congressional seat. And my Republicans in North Carolina lined up to strip away one of the only, right, black male Democrats that I have in Congress right now, Congressman Don Davis. And they are trying to strip away his right to be able to represent a majority-minority district in eastern North Carolina. And we are seeing Republicans do that across the country, right, with the VRA and the eradication of Section 2 right now that Trump's Department of Justice is challenging. And I talk about the long-term gains in North Carolina that we can make for the nation because folks need to understand that that is going to happen. We are about to see 19 rural Democrats from the South be wiped out of Congress because of the fact that we have not been investing in these communities enough that we need to. And we have got Republicans that are coming to target and honestly racially target, right, Democrats in the South right now. And we've seen this before. And so I know that I've been rambling on about this for a minute, but I tell y'all, because you're from everywhere in the country right now, I know that people are upset and fed up and tired and angry, but I'm in the South, North Carolina, Mississippi, Georgia, all the states that I just talked about, Louisiana, yes, like, thank you, my goodness, my audience right here. We have been in a place where the nation is now having to experience what the South has been going through since the Civil Rights Movement happened. And so if y'all are tired, I say welcome to the fight. We've been for a long time, but we're still down there fighting, and we need every single one of you with us right now. We need the nation to say, we're going to free everybody, and that means everybody in the South, too, right now. And so I hope that you all leave here today feeling like you are empowered to go out there and be the face of the Democratic Party, because to the question that you asked earlier, I think, again, we're looking up instead of looking down and around. The Democratic Party is every person in this room. It is not one person in Washington, D.C., or anybody that we're looking to as a leader of it. We are all leaders of this party, and I hope you leave here today feeling like a leader of this party and saying, I'm going to do everything I can to go out and make this party what I believe it should be.
Thank you, Reverend Dr. Anderson Clayton.
Anderson's, I guess, pointing out something that's really, really important. If you think back to the Civil Rights Movement, it came from North Carolina, a large part. It came from the kids in North Carolina that sat at the lunch counter. Mm-hmm. And I believe that young people will save this country. I believe because of her energy. And if y'all got my kids, like, I don't have to remind them to vote. My son finally, like, sent his ballot to his college address. When the 21-year-olds wake up, that's when you know shit's about to go down. That is when you know. And so North Carolina is pivotal. Keep doing that work. But also the young people. Y'all actually have to vote. And people, older people will ask me, what can I do? I'm like, get your kids and your grandkids to vote, please. Because you're up here making phone calls, but you're not holding the rest of the people in your family accountable. So what are you doing?
This episode is brought to you by Bubs Naturals. Getting older hits harder than you expect, right? Right, Alyssa?
Don't we talk about this all the time? Hits me like a Mack truck every other day.
I have had a lot of lower back pain, and I'm, you know what? This is like something I should be talking about with a therapist. Rather than doing extra ab work? Because sometimes if you have back pain, the like remedy is ab work.
Yep, the reverse. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, exactly. Rather than like starting that exercise program, I don't want to because I don't want to know if my back pain is permanent or not. I want to know that there's a possibility that if I exercised my abs, it would hurt less. And like not knowing for sure gives me hope that this isn't just the pain that I live with for the rest of my life.
That's akin to when my gyno told me I should really start hormone replacement therapy and I didn't because I was afraid it wouldn't work.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like the same psychology that's like after a big weekend when you're 25 and you're like, if I don't check my bank account balance, I'm not overdrawn.
I still have money.
Right. Well, that's where Bubs Naturals Collagen Peptides comes in. Starting in your mid-20s, your body naturally produces less collagen every year. And collagen is the protein that holds everything together. It's literally the glue of the body. With Bubs, you can help restore collagen levels closer to what your body naturally had in its youth. That means stronger joints, healthier hair and nails, smoother skin, and faster recovery. And it's super easy to use. Just mix Bubs in your coffee, smoothie, or juice every morning. It's tasteless, odorless, and dissolves instantly. No clumps, no weird aftertaste.
And here's what makes Bubs truly different. The brand is a tribute to former Navy SEAL Glenn Bub Doherty, a national hero who gave his life saving Americans in Benghazi, Libya. Glenn's call sign was Bub, and he was the kind of guy who always pushed for self-improvement and helped everyone around him. That DNA is woven into the Bubs brand. And to honor him, Bubs donates 10% of all profits to charity, starting with the Glenn Doherty Memorial Foundation. On top of that, Bubs is built to the highest standard, no junk, zero sugars, sweeteners, or fillers. It's third-party tested, NSF certified for sport, Whole30 approved, and sustainably sourced from grass-fed, pasture-raised cattle. It's trusted by over 100,000 customers and was named Best Collagen of 2024 by Health.com. Erin, I swear by collagen, and I love Bubs.
Yeah.
I put it in my coffee. Can you see my hair has started to grow back? My nails are better. My skin... The turkey neck's getting a little bit better, and it's all since I started putting the collagen in my coffee and the peptides on my face.
Collagen is amazing, and like the fact that you can just be like, plop, put some in your smoothie, put it in your coffee, put it in whatever you drink in the morning. You don't have to do like a separate whole like smoothie routine if you don't want to. You can if you want. Some people
you can
enjoy
if you
that.
Want, but I just put it in my coffee, and it actually just makes it taste like a little richer and creamier.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Live better longer. For a limited time only, our listeners are getting 20% off at Bubs Naturals by using code Hysteria at checkout. Just head to BUBSnaturals.com and use code Hysteria and you're all set. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that our show sent you.
If you love Positive America and want more of my political analysis, you should subscribe to my newsletter, The Message Box. I'm Dan Pfeiffer, former senior advisor to Barack Obama, and in Message Box, I break down what's actually happening in politics and what it's going to take to beat Donald Trump and MAGA. If you follow every poll and every twist and turn in the campaign, Message Box is for you. This isn't just hot takes. Every edition delivers clear analysis, behind-the-scenes insight, and practical strategy you can actually use, whether you're working on a race, organizing your community, or just trying to win the argument in your group chat. So if you're listening to this, hit pause, go to your browser, and head to crooked.com/yeswedan, because I have a special offer for Crooked Media fans. You'll get 20% off a Message Box for an entire year. So go to crooked.com/yeswedan.
Okay, I have several points that I want to make.
Please.
So, first of all, on that note about holding people in our own lives accountable, that requires us to still be in conversation with people in our own lives. And Representative Bynum said something earlier in the conversation about how you don't always agree with your husband, but you love your husband. And I think one of the challenges that we have had as a coalition is that over the last 15 to 20 years, we have started to deem relationships to be a tool to reward and punish people for being right or wrong on issues. And I get that instinct, right? I get the instinct to say, I'm going to be an ally. And by being an ally, that means when someone says something about, say, trans people, about my trans friends, I'm going to cut them off. And I get that. That is performative allyship. Mm-hmm. Because if everyone who does that, if everyone who loves trans people does that, there will be no one left in that person's life to hold them accountable, to educate right. them, to invite them into a conversation, to help them evolve. But it also is, I think, conditioned us into thinking that if we are in relationships with people, if we have not cut them out of our lives because we have treated a relationship like it's a tool to reward or punish, then that means we are condoning everything that that person says and believes and thinks. And what it has done is it has undermined our capacity to build that diverse coalition. Mm-hmm. Because we now go, well, I can't invite this person in who's still on a journey because that means I'm condoning everything they think and everything that they believe. Being in relationship with people does not mean you agree with them. And by allowing someone in, it doesn't mean that you're endorsing what they think. It means that you're starting or continuing the conversation necessary to get them to be on your side, to get them to change their mind. Because proximity is necessary for change making. Mm-hmm. Proximity is necessary for people to move past the stereotypes and the caricatures and the disinformation and the misinformation. And that only happens if we are willing to do the hard work of change making. It's not easy, it's not always fair, but it's how we have made change. And the second thing I wanna say to that point is I think Anderson's comments about how the South has been living this, almost this, this reality that gives cause for hopelessness, not just for a couple decades. I mean, throughout almost all of American history, the South has faced the headwinds of hatred and bigotry and prejudice and injustice in a way that no other part of our country has so consistently faced. And what I think we all have to remember in this moment is we have to summon the hope that people in the South have summoned for decades, the hope that people throughout our country's history have summoned for centuries, because I think we mistake optimism for hope. Mm-hmm. And we absolutely have plenty of reasons to be pessimistic about our politics right now, to feel like it is so fundamentally broken that it can no longer meet the needs of the people and meet the scope and the scale of the challenges that we face. But one of the things I think about every single time I go on the floor of the House of Representatives with Representative Bynum and my other colleagues, you step into that chamber, the place where the House of Representatives moved in 1857, just before the Civil War. It's the place where the 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment were passed, where women got the right to vote, where Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare were created, where the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act were passed. And when you step out of the present that views history with the hindsight of inevitability, and you step into the shoes of the people who fought for that progress, when it was not inevitable and in fact seemed impossible, you realize that the feeling that we have right now, that feeling of hopelessness, of cynicism, that politics can't deliver for us. Yeah, it feels different than 20 years ago when Alyssa was in the White House, when it felt like if we simply worked for it, change was inevitable. And now we can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. When you go back and you think about all of those moments in history prior to our living memory, you realize that that sense of inevitability that with hard work, change will come, that is the exception in our history. Every single one of those advocates and activists and everyday citizens and people who fought for that change that happened in the chamber that we serve in, they couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And you cannot tell me that the reasons for hopelessness now are greater than the reasons for hopelessness for an enslaved person in the 1850s who had no reason to believe that an Emancipation Proclamation was on the horizon. You cannot tell me that the reasons for hopelessness now are greater than the reasons for hopelessness for an unemployed worker in the early days of the Great Depression who had never heard of the New Deal. You cannot tell me that the reasons for hopelessness now are greater than the reasons for hopelessness for a closeted LGBTQ person in the 1950s who never knew of an America where they could live openly and authentically as themselves without violating the law. They could not see the light at the end of the tunnel. They had every reason to believe that our politics could not deliver for them because it never had, ever. And yet they persevered. They summoned their hope, they found the light, and they changed the world. And we in this space, in this movement, in this party, we cannot be the first generation of Americans to actually give up hope when we have far more reasons to believe that our politics can work than any other generation.
Representative McBride, your story reminds me of a story about President Obama that I don't think I've ever really talked about, which was one of my jobs in the White House as deputy chief was all the terrible things, hurricanes, shootings, wildfires, you name it. And so the president and I were heading out west to a wildfire, and the representative from the district was someone who had said something unspeakable about President Obama during the campaign. And I was sort of known a bit as the scorekeeper, okay? I remembered all the bad people. I remember people who did not help. I remember people who did not show up. I remember people who complained instead of just doing what we needed them to do. And I said to him, we were getting on Air Force One, and I said, sir, by the way, I just want you to know, I've made sure that you will not see that person. And he said, what person? I said, this person who said these things about you. And he goes, what things? I'm like, I'm not repeating them. And he's like, tell me what they said. And I was like, I'm not repeating it. But he, of course, remembered because it was horrible. And he said, Alyssa, I said, I made sure he'll be in a different car. You won't see him. He said, Alyssa, when we land, I want him in the car. I want him with me all day. And I said,
I love a petty man.
Okay. And so here's what's happening.
Call me Petty LaBelle.
We drive around and we have seen people's homes that were destroyed. We have been to the shelter where people are. And by the last stop, which was our press conference, that member of Congress stood in front of the microphone and said, President Barack Obama cares about you. He is here because he cares. And I am grateful for his visit. And, we get back in the car. I'm in a different car. We get up back on Air Force One. And the president turns to me and he goes, and that, Alyssa, is how you do that. And I said, okay. I said, that's fair. And I said, and we ended up having this conversation. And he gave me like the best bit of advice that I think goes so much to what Representative McBride said. And he said, when someone in your environment you really disagree with, or they hold a belief that you just don't understand, don't accuse, lead with curiosity. Ask them questions, ask them why. He says, because sometimes it is not what you expect. You don't know people's lived experience. You don't know why they might have voted for someone that they voted for. And so he has always taught me to try to lead with curiosity and keep an open mind. And that concludes the not petty part of the conversation, because I have a sort of, and it's something I observed over the last couple of months, and I'm just curious what all of you think. So all of you, please chime in. We talk this, I led this whole section talking about why everyone's pissed at Democrats and why they have such unfavorability. But we just went through an election where I did not see one leader of the Republican Party show up to stump for any of the candidates. I didn't see J.D. Vance. President Trump did not show up. I did not see anybody. I feel like Representative McBride has opinions. No, please. No, that was it. I'm just curious. So I'm curious any of your opinions on why you think Republican leaders did not show up. I did not see John Thune. I did not see any Republican leaders showing up in New York, in New Jersey, in Virginia, across the country. And so I'm curious, how popular are they? Sarah?
They're unpopular.
Right?
No, I mean, look, the Republican Party is a lot of things, but they understand politics.
Mm-hmm.
They're ruthless in their pursuit of power, often illegally and immorally. But right now, Donald Trump is deeply unpopular, and J.D. Vance is both deeply unpopular and deeply unlikable.
Totally.
And they're also consumed with petty grievances in their party.
Right.
Right? I mean, I don't think it would have been helpful for the Republican ticket in Virginia if Donald Trump showed up after firing, you know, a not insignificant portion of their state, Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. But even if they were popular, they wouldn't do it because someone didn't endorse someone in the last election. And I think that is their undoing, so long as we don't make it our own undoing in our own party.
Right.
So long as we don't get consumed by our own sort of factional infighting and recognize that if indeed everything is on the line, if indeed this is a five-alarm fire for our democracy, if indeed everything is at stake, then damn it, I will take all of the help that I can get from anyone who is willing to help me and help me save democracy, because we have to, in this moment, have such a resounding victory in 2026 that they cannot rig their way to power before or after. And damn it, hopefully have enough wins in 2026 that we lay the foundation to have a trifecta in 2029, come January, with a Democratic president, a Democratic House, and a Democratic Senate. And that's also going to mean running candidates that look very different from one another.
Mm-hmm.
In the campaigns they run, in sometimes the positions they stake out. But I think one of the lessons that we can take from Tuesday's wins, and you said a key word that I have been used, that I just think we have to embody every single day, and that is curiosity. Because I think all of the candidates that won on Tuesday, and I think many of the candidates who won in the last election, they successfully, regardless of where they ran and regardless of what their ideology is within the party, all three employed three kinds of politics very successfully. Whether you are Mikey Sherrill, Zohran Mamdani, Abigail Spanberger, or folks who ran in the last cycle, many of our freshman colleagues. And that is one, obviously something we hear a lot about, the politics of affordability,
mm-hmm.
a laser focus on the economy, not in a way that refuses to engage on other issues, not in a way that sticks your head in the sand when it comes to attacks on immigrants or the LGBTQ community or people of color in this country, but a laser focus proactively on the economy. Two, a politics that I call I love Ted Lasso, the politics of Ted Lasso, to be curious, not judgmental.
Yeah.
Right, to go everywhere. What was Zohran Mamdani's first viral video? It was a video of him having conversations with voters after the last election, many of whom voted for Donald Trump.
Yep.
Having a conversation that was open-minded, where they were respectful, where they were finding commonality. And I got to tell you, that's a way to go viral online. One way is to be outrageous, right? And the Republicans are great at that. But the problem is when Democrats are outrageous, when we're screaming and shouting about how horrible everyone else is, we're seen as shrill, hysterical, and extreme, right? I talked about this on my interview with Pod Save America. But you can go viral by being curious, because we don't see people who disagree with one another being curious about one another, and it taps our curiosity, because it's abnormal in our politics. And so I think all of them went everywhere, they talked to everyone, and they did it in a way that was inviting and curious. And then the third is a politics of place. All of them ran in a way that transcended ideology and transcended partisan affiliation, because at the end of the day, everything was about their community, their district, their state, their neighbors. Hell, if you're running for president, this country, right? It's why America First as a concept is powerful. It's why when Mamdani was asked in the debate, what would be the first foreign country that you would visit? He said, I'm not running to visit a foreign country. I'm running to focus on New York.
Right, right.
When you run with that sense of place, it allows people who might have a different affiliation or even ideology than you to go, you know what? I might not always agree with them, but they are going to fight like hell for this community. And that's what I want in an elected official. And all of the candidates that won successfully employed all three of those politics.
This podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. Here's something that I really like about Squarespace. If you're somebody who wants to start a business, there are so many things that feel like insurmountable hurdles, especially if you haven't done it before. It's like, what paper? How do I tell people about this? How do I do paperwork? Like, how do I set things up? How do I make a space for people to access my business and communicate
with me?
How do I get paid? Squarespace takes a lot of those tasks off your plate. It is the all-in-one website platform designed to help you stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or scaling your business, Squarespace gives you everything you need to claim your domain, showcase your offerings with a professional website, grow your brand, and get paid all in one place.
Erin, I've been playing around with Squarespace because I'm doing a little pop-up before Thanksgiving.
You are?
What screams Thanksgiving more than many varieties of cranberry sauce?
I love that. That screams Thanksgiving.
Yes. And so I'm going to stand out. My local farm store, Max Morningstar, they're like, come do this. And so I'll be standing outside. And one of the things on my to-do list is sort out my Squarespace.
That's awesome. Have you played around with the tools? Like, as it's
look,
really,
it's pretty intuitive, you know? It's like, it's one of those things. I started looking at it, I was like, I think I can do this, which, by the way, was not true of many other websites in the past couple of months. Mm-hmm. This one, I was like, okay, you know what? I looked at it, I'm like, this weekend before pop-ups, not for a couple weeks, but I plan to have my Squarespace all set up by this weekend after we get back from CrookedCon.
Amazing. You know, I'm a MySpace generation native, and I remember we basically had to learn how to code in order to like put website together. And like looking at the
tools, was HTML.
I mean, you really did have to learn some basic tags and stuff. But like, do you think I could bully my mom into starting a costume, like a bespoke costume business?
Absolutely.
And she could be able to use Squarespace?
Absolutely. So easy.
Okay. I'm going to bully her. I'm going to continue to bully her and be like, look, this is easy. You can just do it. You can just make people's
be so fulfilled.
Dreams. She would love it. She would
absolutely love it. And then next year, we can profile her for spooky season as a place where people can get costumes.
I mean, she did build my nephew an Edmund Fitzgerald costume.
Yes, yes.
Wow. The boat. Tell me you're not from Wisconsin, Minnesota, or Michigan without telling me. We had to like memorize the story of the Edmund Fitzgerald. November 10th, 1975. We're coming up on the 50th anniversary. But she could sell her Edmund Fitzgerald costume.
Erin, I even remember what that costume looked like. That was epic.
He was featured on several public radio stations throughout the Great Lakes region.
See, and if we can get your mom on Squarespace, those costumes can come to you.
They would sell like hotcakes. So please join me in bullying my mom. No, try out Squarespace for yourself. Like if you're curious, if you have a business, if you're thinking about starting a business and the thing in between you and it is the idea of like having a place for people to buy your products, get paid, check out Squarespace. It does all the stuff. It does all the stuff. Go to squarespace.com/hysteria for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code hysteria to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/hysteria. Offer code hysteria.
If you love Positive America and want more of my political analysis, you should subscribe to my newsletter, The Message Box. I'm Dan Pfeiffer, former senior advisor to Barack Obama, and in Message Box, I break down what's actually happening in politics and what it's going to take to beat Donald Trump and MAGA. If you follow every poll and every twist and turn in the campaign, Message Box is for you. This isn't just hot takes. Every edition delivers clear analysis, behind-the-scenes insight, and practical strategy you can actually use, whether you're working on a race, organizing your community, or just trying to win the argument in your group chat. So if you're listening to this, hit pause, go to your browser, and head to crooked.com/yeswedan because I have a special offer for Crooked Media fans. You'll get 20% off a message box for an entire year. So go to crooked.com/yeswedan.
So Republicans understand that R on R violence is counterproductive.
Right.
Democrats don't understand that D on D violence is counterproductive. So let's say you don't like the Democrat that won the primary. Like, help the cause. Don't go in and try to, you know, squash the victory that we could have collectively. And I think that is why they chose not to show up in those places, because it was better for them not to show up and help the cause. Because sometimes you have to think about, like, I had this with my police and sheriffs in the state. It was what they did not say about me that allowed me to win versus an endorsement or endorsing the other party.
Right.
And so that's what I think Democrats can learn from this. It's not so much, well, I mean, the Republicans were not in a great position, but it's what they didn't say. They didn't interfere. They didn't try to drive things down. Like, Marjorie Taylor Greene is the only one that's like out there kind of being
what
messy.
What is she doing?
She's being messy. Like, she might switch parties. That's my guess.
No. AOC was 100%
right.
It is a revenge tour. That was the biggest open secret in Congress.
Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
Yeah, she is furious that the Trump White House put the kibosh on her Georgia Senate race.
Yep.
And there's a pre-existing frustration I've heard among Republican women in Congress that Republican men in leadership consistently overlook the Republican women in their party.
Shut your mouth.
And I think she's trying to be like, look, y'all, I can do this statewide thing. I can moderate. Look what you missed out on. I'm at The View and they're fawning over me.
Fawning. Sunny had heart eyes when she was looking at Marjorie Taylor Greene. Okay, I had to get a little MTG in there because it's just been too much fun to watch. Okay, so we're in the home stretch here. We only have 10 minutes left. I wanted to talk a little bit about, which we have touched on already, progress over perfection, which is, you know, of course we will be disappointed if we don't get everything we want, but, you know, one foot in front of the other is better than one step backwards. But so there's that. But Ben, this is something I feel like you and Anderson are probably uniquely qualified. I feel like Trump is trying to really weaponize urban versus rural communities. You know, he is specifically, we see he's sending the National Guard, largely folks from rural parts of the country, into cities. Is there really such a big chasm in the issues facing rural and urban voters right now?
So everybody has to eat.
Right.
And that's true if you live in a city, and it's true if you have to drive 3 hours to get to a city, and Trump is messing that up in a profound way. Trump, you know, there's this great article from years ago, The Cruelty is the Point.
Yep.
And Trump's kind of political idea is that he's going to punch someone that you, his voter, hates so hard that you're just going to be cheering for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he finds people for whom that's exciting. But he misses the fact that you actually have to deliver for people, because people actually live lives where they have to eat food and sleep, hopefully in a bed with a roof over it. And he is attacking cities, but he's not delivering for rural places at all. He's turned his back on them completely. Wisconsin, we make a lot of soybeans in Wisconsin.
Yeah, oh my God.
And they're not being sold to China anymore. Our gin, we're the biggest ginseng producer in the state of Wisconsin in the country. Everyone knows Wisconsin ginseng. It's a big deal. But it's in crisis because Trump has declared a giant trade war with the biggest consumer of Wisconsin ginseng.
Right.
And it is really tough. People are are finding the rug pulled out from under them in rural Wisconsin and in rural America, all over the country, the same way people are in cities. And it might, you know, there might not be, troops going through the couple of intersections in your town. But it's also the case that if you can't afford the groceries and your kids can't buy a place to live near, grandparents who can help take care of the kids while they're working two jobs, it's just not working for you. So there is a huge opportunity, and you can see it in the electoral maps that we just saw.
Yeah.
Democrats overperformed not just in blue places, but everywhere. Every rural county was moving blue. We had the same thing in Wisconsin in the spring Supreme Court election. There are a ton of voters who can recognize that this is not working for them, even if Trump is going after someone who they hoped that he would go after. They still got to live. And right. Democrats connecting with people at that level creates an enormous opportunity. I think that we're going to see flips in parts of the country, in parts of my states and Anderson state, all of our states that seemed out of reach. I think this is a big map moment. And I think it's also a moment to connect on the fact that, as you've been speaking to Representative McGride, that finding the point of commonality, even with people who have profound disagreements,
right.
There are shared fundamental human needs that we can speak to in this moment. We can fight, and then when we win, we have to deliver in order to show that we seal the deal and can actually build a better future together. That is the next part of the job. It is not enough. We beat Scott Walker in Wisconsin in 2018,
yep.
But that was great. But that did not end the fight. That did not unrig our state. It is a long fight. When Trump is in the rearview mirror, we are still going to have work to do. And we need to be able to dig in together and build across all of our differences to be able to do that work. That's the way we get out of this mess.
So, Anderson, I follow you online. I was telling you this. And I saw that you hopped in your car and drove to nearly every corner of North Carolina. You met with voters face-to-face in over 50 cities doing town halls in rural North Carolina. What did you learn? What was most surprising?
So I live in Roxboro, North Carolina right now. I'm from Roxboro in Person County. It's an R+20 county. And I think that the one thing that I could just say, it makes me want to cry, kind of, to be truthful with y'all. I appreciate Representative McBride so much for the comments that you made, because I think it humanizes rural communities. And I think that for a long time, our party has looked at places like where I grew up and said, we don't even think that the people there are even real people in some ways. Like they like different things, they do different things, and they live out so far away from a city. How could they do that in some cases? And growing up in a place like that, I always believed I needed to get out of it, not because that the people there, didn't think the way that I did, because everybody who looked at me growing up there, they said, if you want to do anything with your life, you've got to leave here. You cannot stay in rural North Carolina and make something of yourself and actually have a future in it. And that's what we have told a majority of this country in some ways, in my opinion, that they have to leave the communities that they grew up in and that they care about and that help make them who they are in order to be able to make something bigger of themselves. And so for me, I've really challenged to say rural communities are places that we need to be in more, because when people meet a Democrat in those communities, that's mm-hmm. not what Republicans have been telling them through Fox News and propagandizing them with for the last 40 years, that they have had talk radio with Rush Limbaugh and Rupert Murdoch out there controlling our airwaves and everything else. You know, they actually can meet somebody and understand them and vote for them. And to me, retail politics, it's why, to be truthful with y'all, I'm a very big fan of not the inaccessibility of the Iowa caucus, but the fact that the Iowa caucus was something that had to happen, because it forced presidential candidates to go yeah. into communities like rural areas and like huge swaths of America and say, how do I talk to these people? And I think that that is so important, because it forced you to have the conversation. And there's a really good quote that I loved using from field organizing now to being a state party chair, is that you can't organize those that you don't love. And if you choose to hate people, there is no chance that you have of organizing them into a coalition or into a better future. And for me, I know that's hard for people too, who said, how do you love somebody who hates me automatically, mm-hmm. right? And that's a topic, and I think a crux and a rub that we've got to find a way out of. But for me, it was like having white people going into rural communities and talking to their Republican family members about politics. And for me, it was my Trump voting dad in 2016. Dean, who looked at me at a Thanksgiving dinner table after I just got done being a fellow for Hillary Clinton that year, and I'd put everything I had into that election, and he said, yeah, I voted for him. And I remember throwing a card deck at my dad from across the Thanksgiving table because I was so mad at him for doing that. I was like, how dare you do this to me and vote against me? And it took 4 years of me, my mom, and my sister of pulling my dad in versus pushing him away from me. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, right, my dad voted for Joe Biden. And in 2024, he voted for Kamala Harris. And you can't tell me that it's not possible, but it takes time. And to the point that I'm telling you, I thank you so much for being a leader in our party and saying things that you have, because I think it humanizes folks that for a long time said the Democratic Party doesn't like me, doesn't care about me, doesn't think that I deserve to even be on this planet. And we've told rural communities for so long that the only way for you to survive is to land the plane slowly. How do you figure out how to let your communities die off without actually having a plan for them? And in my version of a North Carolina that works for everybody, no matter what zip code you live in, you should have a job and a place that you can come home to that works for you. And so I think that we have an opportunity, right, to tell the rest of America and rural America that we believe in your communities. We want to see them have a future. And what do you want that future to look like? Help put your hand on it and make it happen with us. Because broadband access, the reason why, right, you know, Joe Biden's presidency to me was important, is that the bipartisan an infrastructure bill said, I believe in every single person, regardless of your zip code's ability to make opportunity for yourself and for your right to have it. And I think we are a party that wants opportunity for everyone, regardless of where you live, right? And that should be what we push on. And for me, rural communities, when we went out there, I do all 100 counties in North Carolina every year. We are always traveling around the state, and we are in every single place that we can find that will let a Democrat come in. And I met with mayors, unaffiliated folks that were serving their cities and their counties, and we heard from them. We did amazing opportunities, I think, for us to really dig in on what makes communities work too. So that way we can tell you in any county in North Carolina right now, who are the people that drive that community forward, whether they be Republicans or Democrats, we know who they are. And if they need help, they know the Democratic Party is there at the state level to be able to do that with them. And so I think that that's a huge opportunity for us. And it doesn't mean that we're going to win back rural America automatically. It means that we're going to make gains, and we're going to continue to push, and we're going to have strong successes in places where we run really, really good candidates that speak for those communities.
Okay, so we're going to do quick closing thoughts down the line. Representative McBride.
Okay, so I'm going to build off of that. And, you know, to your original question, Alyssa, about perfection, you know, perfect being the enemy of the good. Barack Obama obviously always talks about how better is good. But I actually want to step back and get sort of perhaps at risk a little bit esoteric here, because I know we're not talking about democracy on the campaign trail, but I think all of us are here because we believe in democracy. And we recognize that it is at risk in this moment. But believing in democracy doesn't just mean believing in it when it's easy and when it's going well for us. And two hard truths of democracy are this. One is that perfection, from our perspective, and in another word, absolutism, is only possible whether on the left or the right in authoritarianism.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we can be bold, we can be true to our values, we can fight for what we know people need, but the recognition that we are not going to get it all at once is unfortunately, but fortunately, not a bug of democracy, but a feature of democracy, because it also means that those folks on the other side, so long as we have a democracy, won't get everything they want in one foul swoop. It's the hard work of long-term change. But the second truth of democracy, the second hard truth of democracy, goes back to what Anderson was saying, which is that if we truly believe in democracy, not as an abstraction, not as a talking point, but a real thing that we practice every day, then we have to recognize that democracy can only exist if we maintain our belief in other people's capacity to change. And it becomes easy in this moment to feel like persuasion is pointless, to give up on it, because when you open social media, it feels like we are so divided that there's no way to bring people into our fold. But one of the great blessings I have as an elected official going out into areas that are red, blue, and purple in Delaware is I get to meet people offline.
Right.
I get to meet people who aren't in Congress. I get to meet people who aren't on cable news and talk politics with them. And what you realize is that while real disagreements exist, we are not as divided as the algorithms make it seem. Yeah. Most people have goodness in them, have decency in them. We can tap their better angels if we allow ourselves to see them.
You guys, I am so sorry. We have to leave it there. Thank you. I could not be more grateful to have had this incredible panel. Representative Bynum, Ben Winkler, Representative McBride, Anderson Clayton. Thank you so much.
If you love Positive America and want more of my political analysis, you should subscribe to my newsletter, The Message Box. I'm Dan Pfeiffer, former senior advisor to Barack Obama, and in Message Box, I break down what's actually happening in politics and what it's going to take to beat Donald Trump and MAGA. If you follow every poll and every twist and turn in the campaign, Message Box is for you. This isn't just hot takes. Every edition delivers clear analysis, behind-the-scenes insight, and practical strategy you can actually use, whether you're working on a race, organizing your community, or just trying to win the argument in your group chat. So if you're listening to this, hit pause, go to your browser, and head to crooked.com/yeswedan, because I have a special offer for Crooked Media fans. You'll get 20% off a Message Box for an entire year. So go to crooked.com/yeswedan.